Hey, yeah, yeah, I hear you. Look, this seems to be a more serious conversation. Do me a favor, switch over to the private channel and we'll talk there.
Now that the chatter is done, stand by for lights to half, taking preset 15, and rolling VTA. Everyone ready? Okay, stand by VTA. VTA, go.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the private channel. This is where we, as independent contractors, have more serious conversations about the management of our independent lifestyle. As your host, I will introduce you to service providers who can help your present day and future selves. Sit back, grab a pen and paper, and let's learn something together. I'm really excited to have you here. We've been talking about this for a minute.
Yeah.
About having this conversation and recording this conversation for the podcast, the production channel, the private channel. So yep. This is really awesome. I'm here today with Sarah Mears, who is a gifted coach who works with gifted students and adults in understanding the strengths and barriers of the gifted mind. So, you know, I know that's your tagline, but what exactly does that mean?
So a lot of times when people hear the word gifted, they think of the positive connotation of it. So they think of that high ability, the expert in the field, the person that just knows it all. It sounds so great and wonderful. Well, if you really dive into an actual gifted brain in a gifted student, which is typically someone who has a high IQ and has that high ability. It's what I like to call the gifted, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Right. There, you wrote a nice little article on that.
I did. And it was just a basic overview of the fact of there's a lot of pros to being gifted. There's a lot of positives that come along with it and high ability, the ability to learn. But there are a lot of kind of negatives, or if you let them be negatives, that can happen in your world. There's a lot of pieces of being gifted that people don't realize, they don't understand. So I like to bring those pieces to light so people better understand themselves. They don't think there's something wrong with them, but instead understand, whoop, this is just a piece of me. And they kind of learn how to use it to their advantage as opposed to a barrier.
So, you know, I know you and I have talked, spoken about some of the things that I do as far as traveling and working in production and creating events and shows and experiences and working very intensely in this short period of time. What's an example of how being gifted can help somebody in those type of environments?
So if you don't mind, I'm going to use you as a perfect example.
Gosh, I didn't know we were doing that.
So when I first started speaking with Clem, just hearing some of his experiences in it and then using my own knowledge of the gifted brain, I was very quickly able to identify that you are very hyper-focused when you go out onto the job. You have no problem spending 12, 13 hours just singularly focused on what you are working on your strength, on your gift. And that's definitely a pro of having that ability, is you can hyper-focus on one thing and cut the rest of the world out. You can have that high ability of knowledge and learning to be that expert in your field. So that was a positive. But then when you transition to come home, actually turning that piece of your brain off was very hard for you.
Yeah.
And that's very common with a lot of our gifted kids, our gifted adults. That's a common characteristic, is that you do get hyper-focused into one piece of it. That piece of your brain is more built up, that has more connections. You like to live in that piece of your brain. But in order to have a healthy
balance
yeah, in your life, yeah, you need to have other aspects in your life also, including your family and your home. So being able to kind of turn that piece off and live in those other pieces of your world sometimes is a barrier that you have to jump over sometimes.
And, you know, and I love that you said turning that off and talked about the balance, because that's a huge thing for me that I've spoken about on the production channel, is that work-life balance and managing the two. Because it's easy to live in one world versus another, because it's comfortable. If I'm getting paid and doing well and succeeding in this hyper-focused state, then I want to live in this hyper-focused state. Because when I transition out of that world where I'm excelling and succeeding into a world that may not be as familiar or comfortable, and I don't feel like I'm doing as well as or succeeding as I am in my other world, it can be difficult. You know, it's a difficult state in mind. How can somebody, and we're just jumping in deep. Like, I'm not even, we're not even going
fluff. Before we go on there, okay, I want to make a couple metaphors real quick that make me, that I think of when you say that. So you have to think about how common that is. You travel. It's not even like you're just gone to the office for a few hours, for 8 hours a day, and then you come home and you're really good at what you do in the office, and then you come home. You travel. You guys are gone from your family, and you're hyper-focused, not just for that 16-hour day, but then you sleep, and you're right back at it the next day. So you're hyper-focused and live in that part of your world for a good chunk of time, weeks and sometimes months, right, at a time.
Yeah.
Well, then you come home to, let's admit, the hardest part of life, which is like raising kids and having relationships in your family. And you just spent 3 months being the creme de la creme. You are the best of the best where everybody came. Your bucket is full. You feel like a god. You just know you did a great job. And then you come home to your wife's world or your husband's world, who's home taking care of the kids, running the house, doing the day-to-day. And it's hard to fit into that piece. So now not only are you not in your element, you're in a very uncomfortable situation where somebody else is the expert. And with our gifted individuals, they're not used to that. That's a very uncomfortable place to be. But it's a good place to be because it helps you grow. The other analogy that I want to use about the importance of the balance and making sure that you're fostering both sides of those life is think about your car. If you drove your car at 100 miles per hour every day, all day, how well is it going to drive for you in 6-7 months? That's the same thing with your brain. You've got to click it off. You've got to turn it off. You've got to take that break and utilize the different pieces of it, or else it's not going to do that great.
Well, you know, it's so funny that you just said that. So for the audience, how Sarah and I met, she is works for my son's school system in the county, and has these coffee talks at the school for the parents of the gifted students. And just those conversations and being in that environment with other people who are dealing with similar things, it's just a nice support system. So that is a huge thing. And one thing that we've talked about is how the gifted mind works three times as fast than a traditional mind. Is that how would you state
so
that?
So if you have an average IQ, the average IQ is 100. And so gifted typically is two standard deviations above. So that would, a standard deviation is 15 points. So that would be an IQ of 130 or above. Research has shown that if you do have that IQ of 130 or above, your brain makes connections at three times the rate as a typical brain. So your brain is just basically on point. It's on fire
all the time. Yeah.
When you're in that level of the area of your gift. So, because remember, just because we're gifted doesn't mean we're great at everything and all of that. Like, it's in our area, and that's the area that it's growing and competing. Well, there's some good and some bad to that. It has to pull from somewhere else. So that's where we do typically see some of the social, some of the emotional type issues that go along with being gifted. And at the same time, we have to learn to give it a break. Or else that's where we see pieces like anxiety, depression, inability to sleep, different pieces like that that can happen from not giving the brain the break.
And then when we were talking about deficiencies in certain areas like that, it makes me think of like a bar graph. And everything is not 100%. You know, like if you're playing, you know, I remember back in the day playing Mike Tyson Punch-Out, you know, in Nintendo. And there was never a boxer that was always 100%. If you were higher in speed, then you might not be higher in power. But if you were higher in power, then you were in slower in speed. So, you know, if you're gifted in one area, then that would lead to deficiency in another area.
Absolutely.
Right?
So a typical spread or a typical bar graph, if we want to use that visual, would be for an adult. So I'm again going to use you because you're sitting in front of me. We've got your ability to do, and this is not accurate data, I'm making it up as I go.
Thank you for the disclaimer.
Yes, little asterisk there.
Yeah.
The your ability to do production in lighting might be, if we're on a 0 to 10
projection.
Scale. Projection,
yes,
I'm sorry. That's projection and lighting.
No lighting, just projection. I'm a video projectionist.
Video projection is at a 10. His lighting is at a 3.
Yes, there we go.
His ability to keep up with the house and bills and pick up kids and take them to dance and all of that is like at a 5.
Right, right.
His ability to support his wife's endeavors is getting better. It's like a 7. And again, this is made up. I just know she has endeavors. His ability to communicate his needs to his wife and those around him may be a level 2, but his ability to communicate his needs to himself and create an action plan might be at a 9. So you have these different pieces that are strengths and weaknesses that you have to kind of learn how to balance and work together to make yourself successful in your environment.
Right. Now, and I'm going so much further away from where I started, but the way you were saying that and you were looking at or setting that bar graph, can somebody really do that for themselves and understand that themselves?
With the right tools, they could.
Okay.
You have to think that's like, would I be able to...
It's like self-assessment and self-evaluation.
It is. It's self-assessment and self-reflection. Mm-hmm. So with the right tools, you would be able to make those assessments. Like I wouldn't be able to walk in and sit with someone for an hour and make an accurate assessment of them. I would need their self-reflection. They would need my tools piece with it.
Okay.
But yes, if you had the right tools, you had the right understanding and background knowledge of what to look for and what you're assessing, then absolutely. You can come up with that assessment piece of your own. What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? And then discussing the strategies.
So in that regard, how did you get into coaching? Or how did you get into this industry overall?
Gifted in general. I actually taught ESE. This is a funny story. I taught ESE for a long time, which is exceptional student education, the other end of the spectrum.
Okay.
And I had a principal once who is now assistant superintendent of our schools who told me, you're going to start a gifted team. And I told her, no, I'm not. Well, you don't tell her no. So I started a gifted team the very next year with the bribe of if I did it for 1 year, I could do whatever I wanted. Well, the next year, through just learning kind of about the, because my thing was I thought gifted was just, those are the easy kids. I don't want a bunch of kids that are just really smart. I want the challenge. Over that year, I realized that it is so much of a challenge, and it was all new learning, and it was really putting myself in a place professionally to grow, which I loved. So that's kind of how I got into education. From there, I taught in the classroom for a few years. I took the district position where I supported multiple schools, and I really got a chance to look at it from all the different perspectives. I get a chance to work with our adults that teach gifted kids that are gifted individuals themselves. I met quite a few people just in the community through conferences or business connections, community connections to see that aspect of how it looks, not only in my job from kindergarten all the way up to 12th grade spectrum, but then beyond. How does this look if we don't catch this in the elementary, in the middle, in the high schools and support it? How does this look as an adult when they become older?
And it makes me think about, I think about the X-Men, the school for an exceptional individuals and Professor Xavier and everybody.
I win the lottery. It's my next step.
I know you said that. But what does that look like for a gifted adult who hasn't learned how to manage their strengths and their barriers and that good and the bad and the ugly? How can that, those tendencies or what are some of those tendencies that manifest themselves in certain ways as an adult?
Well, there's a few different ways that I've seen it happen where if it's not caught at an early age and strategies put in place, one of the biggest pieces is a lot of times our gifted kiddos in the education system aren't ever adequately really challenged. So once they do actually face a challenge, they don't know how to handle it. So now they're in a workforce or they're in a real work environment where they're with 10 other people who are also really, really good. They face a challenge and they don't have the problem solving strategies to accept the fact that they might not know it and how to get that information. So that's one piece. Because of that, they might just do the bare minimum and get through. So the most, let me see how to word this correctly, the most unsuccessful piece that I've seen that I've helped people work through is not understanding their strengths and their weaknesses and not understanding the how their brain is affecting things like their task initiation, their executive functioning skills, that time management, organization, how to be able to organize everything that's happening in their head, because there's 1,000 things flying around at once in there, and these ideas and these sparks and these connections being made, how to take that and focus it into an actionable next step to move forward. The deficits that we see with kiddos that don't have those major executive functioning skills once they become adults, they were never taught them, they still don't have them, and it's much more prevalent in the real world. So it causes it to be very frustrating for them to function. Whereas if we have those few little strategies in place to help those become more systematic pieces of their life, it helps them in becoming even more successful or taking that success to the next level because now they can manage it.
Okay, right. And I think you mentioned something about one of the executives functioning skills, like writing a list out, and whether you have multiple lists or one list, like how can that help somebody who may find themselves with all these different ideas floating around in their brain?
So the biggest part of it is processing it. So when you're making all these connections and everything's flying around in your head, you have to be able to process that somehow. So I am a visual person. I'm a list person. I love seeing it. Like I know it's a joke between you and I have 85 notebooks within arm's reach at all times. So I like to make a list and just write down everything that is flying around in my head. A, it helps me process it out. It helps me get it out of my head so I can kind of let go of it and not obsess on it for a bit. But B, it also gives me time to let it out and then go back and be able to look at it and reflect it. Oh, that was a good idea. That was a good idea. What were you thinking there? As opposed to acting immediately on it and it not being the best decision. So it kind of gives you that chance to go back and reflect. I've had other people who are way more auditory and they carry around the like a little recorder and they record all those thoughts that go through their head. So there's a lot of different ways to do it, but it's about processing that information out, letting it stew and walking away from it for a minute and then going back and reflecting on it.
Let's see, now I wonder how often are people going back to the list or going back to the listening device? Or is it just a matter of getting it out so that they can then move on to something else?
And it depends on your needs.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm... It depends on what the purpose of that is. If it's just something that's floating around in your head that you don't need, not going back to it is one thing. But one of the strategies that I do work with and I teach is making that part of your routine where you do go back and take a look at everything that was in there. Sometimes you have to. Sometimes you wrote down that huge list and you actually need it to do a future task. But if you notice that you've been writing all this stuff down and like once a week, I go back and kind of take all those notebooks and I combine them up into like one actionable step of a plan for my next week when I'm planning for the next week. Which ones are good ideas that I still want to hold on to but not act on yet? Which ones need to be put aside? They weren't that great idea. And which one do I need to work on next week in coming together? Because that reflective piece is a huge strategy in helping to get your routines in order that's going to help you get those executive functioning pieces in order.
Right. So there's a couple of things I want to talk about in regards to production. So say we're working on something, right, in production, doing our thing, hyper-focused in that moment, and then somebody comes from the side and wants to pull us away from what we're focusing on to go do whatever other task. How does somebody manage that situation where it's like I'm in the zone right now, I'm on this, but management or somebody else is trying to pull me away? How can somebody handle that emotionally? Because I've seen people have issues with that.
Yes, and that comes down to the executive functioning piece of flexibility, mind flexibility. Are you able to switch from one task to another fairly seamlessly without losing your emotional control, basically? So one piece of it is being the communication part of it. Is it something that you can walk away from? Because if it's not, you need to have a standard answer in your head that you're ready to give. I'm sorry, I can't walk away from this right now. I'm in the middle of something. I can get with you in 10 minutes. Is it an emergency? And having that like communication piece. Again, if it's who's writing your check,
right, exactly.
Probably an emergency, yes. And you need to walk away from it. You need to have that strategy in place. And again, this is hard to speak of broadly and
exactly,
say like,
of course.
But a few things you might do is, okay, like a sticky note right there. This is where I'm at. This is what my next step was. Okay, I've put the pause button on here. I can now walk away and deal with what I need to. A secondary person. Do you have an assistant that you can trust to step into that role or to step into that management piece and deal with that issue that you can jive with? Like, you have to find that strategy because that's a real world piece. But again, it all comes down to understanding what works for you based off of how your brain works, having that strategy in place in using it. Not having 10 to pick from, having one or two that when that situation presents itself, it is available and you use it.
Right. Because I'm thinking right now of there's an engineer in charge that I know, an EIC. And so when he's working, like, he's done his task. He's completed, you know, for the most part, laying out all the downstage monitors, all his cable paths are right. And the client comes up, hey, or the technical director comes up, hey, can we move these downstage monitors again? And he's like, I was done. And I was taking a break. Mm-hmm. I was finally taking that moment to decompress.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe
mm-hmm.
that may be a task that you can delegate to, say, a stagehand or somebody on site. But that's good to know that there are different options.
That's a hard word for a gifted person, though,
delegate?
Is delegate.
Mm, why is that?
I feel like 90%, and again, everybody's different, but 90% of the kids, young adults, elderly that I have come across that are in that gifted realm
uh-huh.
also have control issues.
Mm.
We know the right way. This is how I want it done. And it's just easier for me to do it than to explain it to somebody else on
yes.
how to do it. It doesn't matter if it is my husband making dinner, if it is your wife trying to plan something with you, or if it is your stagehand when you try to delegate.
Uh-huh.
So that's an important piece of working through that, is letting go of some of that control. Because if not, you're going to make yourself crazy. That's a big piece of it.
Right.
Is what am I comfortable with, and what resources and strategies can I put into place to be able to delegate pieces out
mm-hmm.
and be okay with it? Because I can have that stagehand do it, but if I'm sitting over his shoulder the whole time, it's not good for him or I.
Right.
So just working through those pieces.
Well, this finally takes me back to somewhere where I was thinking before with the whole, you know, the brain moving three times as fast in that process that of the functioning
mm-hmm.
and delegation involved in there as well, and taking a break, right? How important is it for somebody to realize that a technician, a gifted person, whomever, take a break? You need time for yourself. You need time to recoup, to fill your bucket again or something.
Yes. You have to know yourself. You have to know yourself. You have to understand your brain, and you have to understand what your cues are. So I'll use myself as an example here. My cue when I need a break is all of a sudden, even though I'm working on something, I can no longer hyper-focus on it. I've got six different things going through my head, and I'm not being effective at any of them.
Mm.
I can't type one sentence over here without already thinking about something that's happening here. That's my cue to me. I need to stand up. I need to go, even if it's walking around for 10 minutes. We've talked about this. Instead of doing like an academic task, if I'm working on my computer, I'll get up and go and do something physical. If I'm in an office, like people have walked in and I'm like doing sit-ups, and just to utilize a different piece of my brain.
Yes.
Or I'll go from sitting at my desk to laying on a floor. Like it looks awkward. It doesn't look always professional, but it's switching that piece up because I've noticed I've got to change something because my productivity is not there anymore and I'm not there.
Mm-hmm.
So the biggest piece of it's understanding yourself, understanding your cues and what it is that you need a break. And then having the, again, it goes back to the strategies in place for what does that break look like? Do you need an extended break? Like, I'm not going to take a job for a couple months and go to Tahiti? Or do you need I'm going to, you know, go out and have some dinner for an hour, I'll be back?
Because
if you still continue to work through when your brain is jumping and making these connections that aren't really great connections all of a sudden because you're overworked and you've passed your breaking point, it's not good for anybody, and it's probably going to be something that you're going to have to go back later and fix anyway. You might as well stop and just take that.
So then all of that being said, how do you as a coach help somebody through understanding how to function more effectively?
So the biggest part that I've found is, again, being able to coach people through their own self-reflections and the questions and the tools available to take what you can tell me about your struggles and how you answer these specific questions to be able to help you see these are your strengths, these are pieces that are your barriers, and then also having those strategies or the plethora of strategies to kind of help you match that with what you need in order to put it into place. So you've got the knowledge, you know you, I've got the tools, I've got the strategies, bringing that information together to make it work for you.
So does that start off with just conversations?
It does. Okay. Yep. The first part of it is typically like what I like to call a discovery session. So we literally would just have a chat, like, an hour, 2 hours, however much is needed, where you kind of tell me a little bit more about yourself, what your work is like, how you feel like it's presenting itself and what your barriers you feel like are.
Or what other people may be saying.
Or other people may be saying, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then through that conversational kind of guide, I've got a couple questions that I use just to pull some information out. From that, it's kind of a decision of, is this a good fit? Because again, I'm not a counselor. I'm not a licensed mental health person. I simply know gifted. Mm-hmm. So there have been occasions where it's beyond my scope of understanding, and I'll be the first to say that. So are we a good fit? Is this something I can really help you with? And is this something, do you have any questions for me that I can, make you more comfortable in understanding me? That's the biggest piece, the relationship building. Mm-hmm. After that, it would be a second session, which is the basically the data collection piece. So that is where we are looking at actual executive functioning assessment pieces, some of the social emotional assessment pieces. And we come together using all of that information that I would gather from it to kind of give you my professional opinion of like, this is what I'm looking at for your strengths. This is kind of some of the barriers that we see. From there, we would move on to you can kind of just take that information and be enlightened and say, hey, now I know what I need to work on. I'm going to move forward and kind of research this on my own. Or if you'd like, you can do the individual coaching sessions, which can happen on the phone, virtually, considering all the travel that happens.
Right.
Where we can actually work through the strategies. So I would give you the strategies to try out in your class and would be, or in your class, sorry, that's the education part of it, in your life. Uh-huh. And you would have me there as a resource kind of to bounce it off. This worked. What do I need to adjust? How do I need to implement this? Help me out with really making sure it's a good fit.
Yeah. And I know that we have spoken on the phone and then we've also done Zoom meetings.
Yes.
Which has worked out well because we would be in our individual locations and we can set that on time basis. I do have a question from one of our listeners who, I approached him about this upcoming topic and he finds himself oftentimes being or feeling like he's one of the smartest people in the room. So his question was, how do you handle that of being the smartest person in the room or finding a room where there are people who you feel are smarter than you?
So this is twofold. So this is going to depend on what you feel like your next steps are. So if you are the smartest person in the room, you're probably the smartest person in the room on that topic or in that area. I mean, let's face it, you're not the smartest person on everything. So you have two roads that you can take. You can either choose to share that knowledge. And by sharing that knowledge, you're going to increase your, I don't want to say weaknesses, but learn new skills in collaboration, communication, the art of teaching and coaching. That's a new strategies, new things that you can embed in your life that's going to fill your bucket because you're learning new things, but yet you're still sharing something that you're passionate about and you are the smartest person in the room with. The other side of it is looking at how can I change my room? Do I need to, what connection can I make? What can I do differently? So projection is your, I'm the best at this. I'm the smartest in the room. Maybe
disclaimer.
This is, disclaimer, that is not him. I'm just using him as an example because he's sitting ahead of me.
Yes, please. Thank you. Okay. No.
But it goes back to that lighting where I said lighting within it. Well, maybe the lighting room next door. You've got enough knowledge to enter that room, and by walking into it, you're going to fill your bucket by really learning something new. So that's it. Either share your knowledge and build your skills in education and coaching, or find a new room that's a close connection to yours that can take you to the next level in your own piece, but also give you new knowledge.
Yeah,
because it's all about growing.
50%
rule. I do. So Carnegie Mellon, right? That's the college. Yes, he was a professor there, and I was at a conference for gifted in St. Augustine the last year. And he has a rule of 50%, where basically you should know 50% of the content and achieve at about 50% of the area that you are working in. Because that way you have enough background knowledge to learn the new content and interact with it, but not so much that you're going to be bored with it. And it's at that constant piece of growing. It's all based on growth, because his philosophy and common philosophies right now with growth mindset and everything else is that happiness and that bucket filling really comes from growth. So definitely one of my favorite philosophies. and I have used that personally. I've used it with a lot of my individuals I coach and students and adults with, where can we put you? That you're at that 50%. You do get a chance to grow and learn new things and try new things, because it gets stagnant. It gets, especially for a gifted person, if you don't, on the other hand, if you don't have a chance to make the connections that you can in your head, it's you're going to make them to other pieces. You will see things like depression, underachievement, the connections being made to things that aren't as productive as they could be.
Yeah, and that can definitely spiral into in areas where you don't want to take them. And I've seen some of that. You know, my time on the road, even a little bit in myself, and that was a point in time where I had to do a lot of self reflection. And my wife was my mirror, and my family was that resource that helped me to understand that, hey, you know, you're traveling down a road that is too far off from our family path. So you know, I do want to ask, how does your job and your coaching, how does that fill your bucket?
And honestly, what you just said is exactly where I hit. So I, in our district, was on a team of six, and we were the smartest people in the room. I created policies and created a district-wide gifted programs. I presented annually at national and state conferences. I was working with some of the leading researchers in gifted. And my bucket wasn't filled. I was heading down that road of like, I'm just not happy. What's wrong with me? Why can't I just, like, I've got this great job? And it wasn't getting good. You know, it wasn't going to a good place. And again, I was lucky enough. I have a great team that I work with that kind of brought it out of like, hey, where's this negativity coming from? My husband, kind of that same conversation of, I'm not sure what change needs to happen, but something needs to. And funny enough, I think it's when you and I ran into each other at about the same time where it was, I knew I needed something extra. And this is it. This is a new way to fill my bucket. It's a new way to expand myself outside of the education system, which I'm really, really good at, to other industries and other areas. So I still get to take that knowledge of gifted and utilize it to, I was watching a show the other day, and it was, they were like, you know, the fast speed where they're showing the setting up for a concert. And all of our conversations in the podcast I've watched, I'm like, oh, that's da da da. And I'm like explaining pieces of it to my family's looking at me like I'm crazy, but that's a bucket filler for me. That was new knowledge. That was new connections that I got to make between the two. So that was huge in my piece.
Well, cool. Well, you know, I'm so appreciative that we were finally able to do this and get this done. And I know that this will be a valuable resource for you. Will be a valuable resource.
It's a bucket filler for me. I learned too from it, so I love it.
And your knowledge will be a valuable resource for so many people and us as technicians. I do have your information currently on my website, clemcoav.com /resources mm-hmm. so they can find your contact information there. But how else can people get in contact with you?
The best way to get in contact and read a little bit more about me mm-hmm. is my website, sarahmears.com. I actually have two because S-A-R-A-H-M-E-E-R-S.com. Mm-hmm. So that focuses on anything that I would do at the individual level. So I support schools also and actually have a blanket company called 21st Century Gifted. Mm-hmm. But that focuses more on the education side of it. So the sarahmears.com is everything individual. My email's on there, my phone number's on there. You can reach me there. I haven't put the Zoom up there yet. I do need to put that up because that is a very useful tool.
Yeah, yeah. It's worked out a lot for me with coaching video projectionists and helping them to understand how to be better projectionists on the road and everything. I use Zoom often for coaching, so it's been great.
I tried to fill my bucket with new learning and do my own website, and it only could go so far. Like, I've realized that's not my strength, and we're going to pass that right on to the tech guy, and I'm going to look for other reasons to do that. So.
Well,
cool.
Well, thanks for joining us, and we'll get back to the chatter on the production channel.
Absolutely. Have a great day.